Good day and welcome to the Waystations Ministries podcast. I'm Greg Spencer with a light for your journey and a good word for the road. It's great to be traveling together and I thank you for coming with me. Let's ride together for a while. Hey friends, it's Greg Spencer with Greg Spencer's Waystations Ministries podcast, and I welcome you to our little time together to think spiritually, to think how things are going, to see if there isn't some way that we can improve the way things are going. So I'm really glad to be with you today and hope that you have a good experience here. Hope you've had a good week. That's a real open question right now, as I see so many are so filled with anxiety, so much fear still seems to reign, at least around this area. Persons have not yet started to resume going to things, even though they're open. And there's great concern about the coronavirus. And of course, you've heard all the debate about it. I don't want to focus on that right now. However, I think the themes connect. And so we'll start with one place, but I think you'll see how they both work together. And where I would like to start is a couple of days ago when we gathered all across this country to remember the events of the date 9/11 in 2001. At that time, we were hit, if you will. They call it a terrorist attack, but I think it's a little bit different than that. It's the first time that I know of in our American history in which an attack was not targeted against the government, at least not from the two attacks to the towers in New York City. It was not a part of war, was not an active part of war. It was directed specifically against the citizenry. Now, there were planes, one went into the Pentagon and one was intended to hit maybe the Capitol building. The Pentagon building probably was a target for the White House. So there was targeting towards institutions of the government, symbols of the government. But in New York City, it was all about the citizens. It was the symbol of free economy. It was a symbol of commerce, but it was populated by the general citizenry of our country. It was normal, everyday, common folk. And in those tragic events, it was over 2,900 persons died immediately. There were persons who went to help, friends of mine, for example, who went to New York City after that disaster happened, and they tried to help with the cleanup. And in their exposure to all the toxic dust and dirt, they were afflicted and they died subsequently. It was a terrible, terrible event and the time that followed. During the remembrances, it was beautiful to see the restoration that had been done, the symbols of those days for the purpose of remembrance, both in Shanksville, Pennsylvania, and in New York City. It was inspiring to see the people that went out to remember. It was wonderful to see that there were events all across the country, not just in remembrance of 9/11, but also to honor the first responders, which generally refers to medical personnel, law enforcement personnel. Let's see, who else would that be? That would be the fire companies, volunteer and paid, all being the first to react and to respond to the situations that are so tragic in nature. So it was great to see and to enjoy, but I can't look at that or any symbols of it without it bringing tears to my eyes. It definitely strikes my heart very deeply, and I know it does for an awful lot of folks. If you happen to be around at the time, it was a terrible, terrible thing, a terrible event. And you can see that as it's reflected and reported. The thing that I noticed from most of the speakers that I heard from or what I saw reported in the news was the looking back to 9/11 and the events and emotions that followed. There was kind of a lament, if you will, for persons who did not feel that the unity that we experienced at the time was reflected beyond that. For a couple of weeks or maybe months, we all felt together as one nation. We realized that we were all attacked, even though the planes hit New York or crashed in Shanksville or at the Pentagon. in Washington, we were all hit by that. And it unified us for a while, at least in common purpose and enthusiasm and hope to see things restored, renewed. Sometimes people even wanted retaliation. But the idea was that we were one nation with one wound, and we all wanted to respond together. And so for a little while, at least, we were positive about being American and about working together and trying to resolve at least this crisis and this problem and to bring healing and restoration as much as we possibly could. And the laments that I heard in these memorials was that we've lost that. And that's okay. It's true. We have become very individualized, and for many people, their opinion is worth more than other people's lives. That's a big concern of mine, but the issue is it doesn't have to be that way. We can restore our unity. We can restore our sense of well-being. We can restore our hope, but it takes the work of each and every person to do so. And one of the ways that we do that is not allowing ourselves to succumb or to be victimized by the bad news or the crises or the debates or the people that are screaming for our attention or trying to get us on their side. Instead, it has to be driven by a higher value, because issues come and go. Conflicts come and go. People who desire power or influence will come and go. What really saves a nation is a sense of values, identity, and purpose that is commonly shared by the citizenry. And so I think it's a little bit of compassion, similar to the kind of compassion and care that God has for all of us. And that you'll find reflected. You'll find it reflected in the scriptures. And one of the pieces of wisdom comes from the book of Romans in chapter 12. It's a highlight for a lot of folks as the peak of writing by the Apostle Paul. And what he did is he wrote letters to churches that were going through various crises and problems. They would reach out to him and ask for help. And he would send letters to advise and to give counsel and to teach. And so Romans 12 is considered to be the pinnacle of that thought, which is very important because it was shortly after that time that Paul, I believe, was headed on his way to Jerusalem, and he never made it to that city. He knew that he probably would be executed at one place or another, maybe assassinated. But whenever it happened, he knew that that was going to happen. That was the way his days were going to end because of the opposition he had to face. So from that high point of writing, we get some tremendous advice and counsel about how to live. And in chapter 12, verse 2, it says, "Do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your minds, so that you may discern what is the will of God, what is good and acceptable and perfect." Now, I think that's a profound statement. Do not be conformed to this world. Oh, this world wants to pressure us into being conformist. We want to be like everybody else. We've known that from the time we were in high school, right? You knew what you had to wear, what was appropriate and what wasn't, what was acceptable and what wasn't. Well, to be subject to the peer pressure means you're always going to be tossed around, pushed around, and overwhelmed by others, and you're going to follow like a herd. Well, that's not what Paul is telling us to be. It's not telling us what to do. We're supposed to be free. In Galatians 5, another letter that he wrote to the people in the city of Galatia, he said, "Do not submit to a yoke of slavery. It's for freedom that Christ has set us free. So do not submit again to being enslaved." That's chapter 5, verse 1, and I think it's a really powerful statement like this. You are free. You're free to make your own mind, and so you are responsible to use your own wisdom, your own experience, and to take responsibility for your life. When it says do not be conformed, do not allow the pressure to feel depressed or anxious. Do not let the news or the slant of the news, no matter which side of whatever issue it may be, you have the freedom to choose your own thoughts, and that's probably healthier for all of us. We want to get the facts as much as we can. We want to make good judgment, but we do not want to be controlled by others. We don't want to be overwhelmed by others, and God doesn't want that either. Be transformed by the renewing of your mind. Okay, if I'm going to renew my mind, what's that mean? Well, it means I need to think differently. I need to perceive differently. I need to understand differently. I need to renew the way in which I think. If you get used to thinking in negative ways, no wonder you're always depressed or anxious or angry. The renewing of your mind is to say, hey, let's look at things a little bit differently. Let's look for where there is good in our midst. And this is what I was thinking about 9/11. Rather than looking back and grieving about the fact that we're not united, I would rather, much rather, look forward and say, how can we rebuild that which was so good, which we once knew and somehow lost? Is there a way that we can restore hope? Is there a way that we can restore goodwill? Is there a way that we can restore unity? How can we do that? I love the promise that goes with that scripture. As challenging as it is to become free and to be responsible, there is a blessing that's included in that verse. So that you may discern what is the will of God. That is a powerful, powerful thing. If we could understand who God is and how God works, what God's will and intention is, then we would be much more secure in our living and how to do our living. We would know what God's will and plan is. We would understand what that is, and we would understand how to fit into it, how to fit go along with it, how to live well, and how it can empower us to live well, no matter what our circumstances might be. Now, I think this is what God intends for all of us. I think we are individuals and we are free. And I think that is a wonderful, wonderful way to be. I think that's what it should be. But we do have to be responsible so that we don't succumb to slavery, so that we don't give in or give up or surrender. We don't want to surrender to illness. We don't want to surrender to conflict. We don't want to surrender to despair. We want to try to have hope in the midst of those things and overcome them, right? So what he says in chapter 12, verse 16, is one of the ways to do that is to live in harmony with one another. Do not be arrogant, but associate with the lowly. Do not claim to be wiser than you are. Well, what we have is people get very, very passionate about their positions. And unfortunately, when we're in an isolated culture, as we seem to be now, what happens is, as long as we get along, that's fine. But if I disagree with you, then heck with you. They'll forget all about you. They'll discard you. They'll drop you. And you may know what that's like. You may remember how dating relationships started and ended in matters of days or weeks in high school. It wasn't quite the same, but it was similar, that as long as we got along, it was great, but then somehow we'd break up and we'd have to move on. Well, I think this is what happens. When we have conflict, what we don't do is live in harmony with each other. We try to dust people off or push them aside or avoid them or cause them to leave because we no longer get along. That it really isn't the healthiest way to be. It certainly isn't the way community is supposed to be. It's not the way God designed us to be. Why not? Because each one of us has our own mind. We all have our own background and experiences. We have our own families, our own work, our skills, our talents. They're all different. Now, does that mean that we can't get along? Absolutely not. It means harmony. Now, as some of you may know, we do a lot with music in connection with spirituality at Way Stations and at Steamworks, with the Steamworks Spirit Station. And music is a great way to illustrate what he's talking about when he says live in harmony. Harmony means you have different notes all being played at the same time, and they go together. So that each makes its own contribution, and they all benefit. It's a wonderful way to listen. Now, we can sing in the shower, more or less. we would be a solo singer. And we can enjoy doing that. We can enjoy singing songs on our own. But when we can come together and hear the different parts all being sung together, whether it's listening on the radio or singing along with the radio or listening to Spotify or something like that, when you're listening to the music blending together, that's when the magic happens. And that is precious. And this is what's true about us in our relationships with each other too. When we live in harmony with each other, we get along. We find the ways to get along. We see how we can fit, how to keep the timing. Arrogance, that isolates, it pushes people away. when you push people away, you're not likely to come back together again because you can't forget the hardship. You don't want to claim to be wiser than you are because you'll be proven false sooner or later. That's not where you want to be. What works best is when we get along, when we work towards unity. That means sometimes showing some discipline, keeping your mouth shut when you'd rather emotionally give an outburst, being careful about how you respond and how you react, being responsible about how you present yourself to other persons, and remembering that it's not just the person that you might be in disagreement with, but everyone around that's watching. How do you respond to this? That tells them a lot about your character, about who you are, about whether they can trust and rely on you, whether you'd be a good friend or not. These are very important things. So living in harmony with each other is what enables us to get along together. We just have to deprioritize ourselves or our thoughts, our opinions, or our desires, and value more ours together. This is what I say to couples in premarital counseling or in marital counseling when they run into problems, is in order to resolve your issues, we has to be more important than me. Harmony is what makes it work. Finally, what he says in chapter 12 is in verse 18, if it is possible, so far as it depends on you, live peaceably with all. What we've seen lately is people aren't at all interested in peace. They're interested in their own passions or desires or the way they want things to be. And that's where the conflict happens. That's where this animosity occurs. That's where our tensions or our emotions are brought to the surface so quickly and so easily. Well, I'd like to suggest to you that what Paul is giving to us is a way to live that is less conflictual, less problematic, less unhappy, less despairing, less anxious, less grief-filled, less shame-filled, less worried. And the less we have of those things, that makes room for good things. We like the people that are kind. We like the people who are cheerful. We like to be spending time with people who add to our lives. I call them life givers, not life takers. And those persons help us to get along and to feel better about ourselves, about what's going on around us. They give us a broader perspective. They help us to be more effective. This is what we hope for ourselves and for our families, for our friends, for our workplaces. It's what we hope for our community too, isn't it? It's what we hope for in our relationships with everybody else. It can be that way. Now, it's not going to happen overnight. Of course, it's going to happen one person at a time, one situation at a time, one conversation at a time. And sometimes we'll make mistakes. But if everybody knows our sincere desire and our effort, our motivation, and our principle of living well and being kind and getting along, well, we can forgive each other, can't we? We have the ways of overcoming the things that harm, the things that upset, the things that draw us down. And if we would apply those things, we'd create the life we're looking for. We'd build it together. And that's called restoration. That's what we do to restore one another and to restore our hope as a nation. After the Twin Towers came down on 9/11 and all that despair happened and all that long time of cleanup and recovery, there was a commitment. We want to rebuild. We want to show that we're not defeated. We want to rise up, and we will do so. And what they did is they built something called the Freedom Tower. And so what you see on 9/11, particularly in the evening, is you see the lights of the Freedom Tower in New York City, which does indeed tower above all the other buildings. And you see the blue lights shining miles up into the sky. That we remember what we once were. We remember the tragedies that can happen. And we work hard to restore ourselves and to live better. To be free. And to make it possible for others to be free as well. For when we're free, we're happy. Well, that's the thought for today. I hope it is a blessing to you and maybe encourages you to think about what's possible, what can be, and taking steps to get there. When we're thinking good thoughts about the positive future that we can envision, oh, it gets better every step along the way, every single day. I hope you have a good week, and I hope that you'll come back with us next week. I hope you'll share this if you think it's worthwhile, and let others know the good news, because the more that know the good news, the more we'll cherish it, the happier we'll all be together. Have a great week. Take care. Bye-bye. Well, I'd like to thank you for being with us this time and hope that you'll join us again next time, next week, when we get together for a little more time on the road together. May it be good for you all the way through.